Good evening and welcome to the February 21st, 2006 Carborough Board of Aldermen meeting. It is a primarily public hearing meeting for us tonight. However, we have a few items for our consent agenda, Mr. Manager.
Okay.
Item one is approval of the minutes of the previous meeting on February 14th. Item two is a request to approve a budget amendment. Item three is a town code amendment for parking restrictions in the Weaver Street parking lot.
Move the items.
Second that.
The items have been moved and seconded all together. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. The matter passes unanimously. At this point, we are on to our first public hearing, which is a public hearing to obtain community input on town needs and budget priorities for next fiscal year. Mr. Manager.
Okay. As you all know, annually, the Board of Aldermen adopts budget effective July 1st through June 30th for the town. The Board, as a part of its budget review, annually schedules a public hearing to receive comments from residents in the community regarding town services. These comments will be considered in developing the fiscal year 2006-2007 operating and capital budgets during the budget process. And parenthetically, I might note that there will be another public hearing on the budget in May following the presentation of the budget to the board.
Do we have to close this public hearing? Can we just leave it open? Or
I think it's
yes. Well, yes to the second. Whoops. Second question. Ah.
So we can. This is a sort of discretionary hearing that we. This is just the way we approach it in Carborough.
That's right. This,
how it's
this, the one in May is legally required. This one is one that the board a number of years ago chose to have at the beginning of the budget process.
Okay. Great. Thanks for that clarification. So I received a couple of emails during the day, and I think some of those have been forwarded to the whole board, but I brought a couple of those to just kind of read into the discussion tonight. But are there any citizens here who wish to speak on at this hearing? Okay. Seeing none.
I bet you said we're going to raise taxes.
Yeah.
Everybody will
you said that, not me.
Can I make this suggestion?
Sure.
Can we have sort of a email address on the website that if people want to comment about the budget, that they can continually comment if they didn't have the opportunity to come to the public hearing, just to make sure that we get all kinds of input? Is that possible?
I'm sure it is. I mean, I will say, you know, my email address and all the staff members' email addresses are on there, and we certainly hear from folks about lots of issues. If there's something specifically you want us to put on about the budget, we can talk to Andy and see what we can do.
I was just thinking that, you know, like a budget at Town of Carver, that, I mean, that doesn't necessarily have to be, and then people would, I mean, that's just a suggestion. I don't know how the rest of the board feels. I was just thinking about that in terms of people can go directly to that, make it easy for people to sort of make a cut. But, I mean, you know, we don't have to. I mean, people can still do the seven, you know, board member type things. I was just thinking that would be a way that people could just get it directly.
Yeah, I would just support that. If it ain't too hard to perhaps have Andy just put a large button on the homepage, which would shoot him to a central, just a central account, which then would be
commentary
CC'd
box
to you and all of us. Yeah, that's a real simple interface rather than having to click through this board member and that and whoever and the whatnot. I think people would appreciate that. And as well, I have an email, and I didn't see a CC on it to the rest of the board, so I'll just enter this into the record and forward it to, I guess, the manager.
Was that from Sharon Cook?
Yes, from Sharon. And you got it also?
I got a copy. I don't know if we all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I think
you
got forwarded around.
Can I add something to
sure.
this that Alderman Saffron brought up at the in the retreat? Remember you mentioned it was possible to revive that survey? Do you remember that for citizens' input, which I think that kind of told us, you know, the priorities and based on our goals and priorities, give the citizens an input on for them to put, to give us direct feedback on issues that are important to them for the budget. And I think we use it, should be somewhere in the old archives of the website, that budget survey, or we can design something
that,
really
that was a fairly involved process from maybe the year before I came here that and that was contracted for. That's not something we just snap our fingers and be able to do. I had anticipated, based on the conversation the board had at the retreat, that we were going to have a work session on different community building ideas, and that that would be one of those items that, that we would have a conversation about. But in terms of being able to do something quickly with that, it would be difficult to do it and do it in a way that would be meaningful.
Okay. Maybe that's a next year thing.
It's just, it's like citizens, like what do they know to comment on, you know, sort of, people need to have a blueprint of what we're doing or priorities that not everybody kind of, it's a number cruncher that will go there, download the budget and say, what about, you know, come up with some brilliant ideas, but somewhere, but maybe, you, like you say, we should explore avenues to get more direct input from the citizens.
Yeah, it was more of an, if folks will recall, it was an overarching policy survey which covered all areas involving both budgetary priorities, priorities in terms of planning, and more general policy issues and was, you know, it's a market research tool, if you will. It's an actual survey, and in order for it to be valid and informative, there's a careful, complicated process that you have to go through to tease out what kind of information you're trying to get and get folks to respond to. So anyway, that's sort of the long answer and why it has to be given careful thought, and it, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it. I think it's worthwhile pursuing. I agree.
When was this done?
A couple of years ago.
Maybe.
Three
years?
I think it took us several months to
right. To
put it together and have the whoever drafted it come up with several iterations and then
right. Run
it by us and run it by staff as well. And then, of course, as we gave input, a survey researcher would go, no, you can't ask a question that way. And trying to tease out the questions so that they weren't leading. It's all the stuff involving market research methodology. I used to be in the business, and it's not easy to really try to get at the heart of what you're trying to get at in an objective fashion.
You have to redo it every time you want it. I mean, I know there are certain things that
change,
the questions should be the same.
It was a single iteration. And now the questions aren't necessarily the same because many of them, as I recall, it's been a long time, but many of them dealt with pressing issues of the day, and many of those have been resolved in one way or another. Many of them have not. I thought we, you know, in the retreat we were talking about scheduling as an agenda item. So we may want to, at some point, look at the old materials and determine what we want to do.
And maybe if we could start there, if the manager could get somebody to dig out what the survey looked like last time, then we can kind of proceed from taking a look at that.
Yep.
So I just wanted to, real quickly, I know y'all have most of this in front of you, but just so that people hear the kinds of things we're looking at, we'll enter all these items into consideration about the budget. But we received a letter from Orange Community Housing and Land Trust requesting the $22,000 in operational support from the town of Carrboro, Alex, do you know what
that's the same allocation as last year. It bumped from 20 to 22.
Okay, so we moved it a year or two ago from 20 to 22, right. And they're requesting the same number this
year.
Hey,
Robert, we're talking about you.
You want to come up and talk about yourself, Robert?
I have nothing but good things to say.
Well, as long as you can keep it positive. No, that's great.
Sorry, being late.
Land Trust. Thank you all for your support, as always. We're finally starting to move into Carrboro, as I promised last year. And we just keep growing. The work keeps coming our way. We need, I need good staff people. I've got a very good staff. I want to keep them all and continue to do the work that we do. We're projecting an increase in the budget overall, a fairly substantial increase, but we have diversified our funding sources. We only need the same 22,000 that we received in the current year, and we have an $11,000 deficit, and we can cover that with our operating funds. So thank you again for your support. If you have any questions about what we're doing, I'm happy to answer those.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
I forwarded an email from, or no, I forwarded y'all a comment that I read on the internet from a Carrboro resident who is legally blind and lives in downtown Carrboro about how few audio crossing signals there are. These are crosswalk light. We have lights, but we don't have audio signals. Anyway, I think there's a few in Chapel Hill, and I don't know if there are any in Carrboro, actually. But anyway, I wanted to put that out there as maybe something we could take a look at. I don't know whether you know, there's any state or federal money to help out
there,
across that.
Yeah, there may not even be a budget implication. We may be able to just simply forward that through Dale to both the MPO and NCDOT.
I've already sent it to Dale, and preliminary indications are it's possible that we could get state funding in.
Yeah,
we just need to identify
we could probably
intersections.
Yeah, we could probably troll up some SDPDA money or safety funds. That's such a small item. It shouldn't be real hard. We've done some upfits on signalization. I'm not even going to go into it. it shouldn't be hard to do.
Federal money.
Some federal, some state, mix and match.
Well, that would be great if we could take a look at that. I know sometimes things like that are, you know, not that expensive, but surprisingly expensive nonetheless. But anyway, so I would like us to take a look at that. And I also want to suggest along the same general lines that we take a look at the question of the accessibility of our town hall. Obviously, our town hall was built long before the Americans with Disabilities Act was passed. But just the front door of town hall remains not that accessible for people who have trouble walking or cannot walk. And I would just like us to take a look at whether there's an inexpensive way to make the front door of town hall more accessible to people using wheelchairs or walkers or that kind of thing. Well, yeah, I don't know how to describe the various technological solutions, but I would like us to look at whether there's something cost-effective that we could do about that. And then just we received, I guess we all received this email from Sharon Cook, who pointed out the need for a bus shelter for the bus stop on Homestead Road around the corner from Rogers Road. So we'll throw that out there. She also mentioned the need to reserve some funds for purchasing lands adjacent to Bowling Creek. And I think, I would just say about that's part of a larger conversation that I think we need to have at some point this year about what we want to do about open space preservation and that sort of thing, and develop a strategy and an approach on that. I know the whole board is interested in that. She suggested prioritizing road repairs and maintenance. And then she, and I think I got one other email about this as well, pointed out this issue that there's been a little bit of discussion about the possibility of combining fire services between the towns of Chapel Hill and Carrboro. And I guess my feeling is that because we're right at this moment considering soliciting applications for a new fire chief, I think it's important for us to swiftly get to the point of stating clearly whether this is something that the board wishes to seriously explore, or whether we think it doesn't, it's not, whether we think it's maybe not an idea that holds enough promise to spend some time on. And so I don't know whether folks would like to share some thoughts about that issue tonight, but my suggestion would be that we ask the staff to prepare to bring us maybe a short memo, a page or two, kind of outlining what they see as the potential benefits, not an exhaustive study of this topic, but just sort of generally the potential savings that there might be from it, and also what potential problems there might be with such an idea.
Well, I guess I have a question. I'm a little uncomfortable with getting a two-pager on an issue that is, I think, is more important than just a two-pager. And so before I could tell you whether or not I would discuss it to hold any merit, I would like to have a more detailed report. I think we do ourselves a disservice by not having sufficient information. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we can make the decision this year in this budget cycle to do that. I mean, if that was the case, we maybe should have had this discussion last year before, or 2 or 3 years ago, before we decided to enter into that agreement with UNC. So before we do that, I think I would want more than just a 2 or 3 pager to be discussed during the budget process, unless, I mean, if we're going to really consider it for this budget process, then we need more than a 2 or 3 pager. So I'm asking, what end result do we expect to get with a 2 or 3 pager? Is it going to be part of the budget process or not part of the budget process? Because if it's going to be part of the budget process, then I'm going to want more. And even if it's not going to be part of the budget process, I think we do the citizens a disservice if we don't really look at it closely. And that would be my position.
I just wanted to say that I feel the reason that this is coming out the way it is that folks see this as a fire response issue. And from what I know, and that's limited, but I know that the fire folk are not only trained to respond to fires. In fact, that's probably the most obvious thing that we see, but it's all the other training that they have, the hazmat training, the terrorism training. It goes way beyond fire. And so in addition to any report, and I wholly support the fact that a very detailed report would need to be done over a long period of time to really assess this. It's not just a matter of combining services. They're not compatible services. Comparable, I mean. But it's also a matter of having the fire folk maybe do a presentation that the public can see, to know the kind of training and first responder qualities that we would be talking about potentially merging and giving up neighborhood knowledge and ownership of.
I think, Mark, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what you're suggesting, which I agree with, is that there's a short-term question, which is not the question of whether or not we actually merge the fire departments, but the question of whether we put the hiring of a fire chief on hold while we explore that question, and that, you know, if there's some information that can be provided relatively quickly, you know, I think that's kind of the time frame that we're in on that, is fairly short term, that, you know, the short report, as I understand it, is not to decide whether or not we're going to do something, but whether or not we're going to pursue it and hold off on hiring a fire chief while we pursue it. And I think if we can get information in the, you know, soon that could help us make that decision, I would support doing that. I think that's a good idea.
I would share some of the other concerns that have been raised. I understand the point that, that Dan's making as well. Some degree of concern that I have about the whole idea is that, we have an answer in search of a question. I'm not really sure exactly what question it is that we're trying to answer with the solution that's been put on the table. I think, as has been adequately explained, this would be a very lengthy and complicated process. And I, to some degree, I think it's unrealistic to, and perhaps unwise, to try to perhaps take advantage of the of a department in transition in order to try to deal with a fundamental organizational question dealing with one of the largest and most complex departments in the town. As Randy touched on, in many respects, the department provides a far greater range of services that are both active and direct citizen service than it does merely to emergency response. So, again, I'm not fundamentally opposed to addressing the question in some orderly fashion, but I have concerns about declining to move forward with making a or with allowing the manager, rather, to make to undertake a very important personnel decision in our leadership team while we, again, figure out how to deal with this answer to a question that hasn't exactly been posed. So
I'd be glad to pose the question. I mean, do we, to my mind, the question is, do we seriously want to take a look at the question of ways that we can potentially reduce the tax rate in the town of Carrboro or not? And I, you know, the reality is that we do have a relatively high tax rate compared with most towns in North Carolina, and I believe that, you know, if this holds a significant amount of promise financially, and I don't know that it does, but if it holds a significant amount of promise that financially, that we ought to be pursuing it. And I guess, you know, I think Dan has got exactly what I'm trying to get at, which is that we should try to either quickly come to the conclusion that it's a thing that we're seriously interested in and want to pursue, or not. And if it's not something that we're seriously interested in, that we should cast it aside utterly, and that we should say, well, we're just not pursuing this at all, because on the one hand, I don't want to make personnel decisions right now that will make this a much more difficult topic to treat later on. But on the other hand, I don't want to drag out a discussion of the possibility of merging fire services through the course of hiring a new fire chief, because I think it'll have a negative impact on the quality of job applicants that we get. If there's the sense that, like, well, if I take this job and then they merge the department, then I won't have a job anymore, then you know. So I think we have to either cast the idea aside completely or else pursue it aggressively. That doesn't mean it happens this year necessarily. But John's not commented yet.
I think the question is, can we shoot gum and walk at the same time? And I think we can do both. To me, I don't think we need to postpone either one. I think we need to pursue and continue looking for ways to save people's tax dollars. But also, I think it is very dangerous for the morale and preparedness of the staff and the fire department of Carrboro to be missing the head of that team. And I think and this is a question that kind of emerged out of the discussions of folks in the new annex area, which the quality of the fire service will continue to be the same, if not will continue to improve as soon as we build that fire station over there. And if we ever merge, of course, I think I want our fire chief to be in charge of the fire department. So our job is to hire the best fire chief that we can find as soon as possible. It's our primary duty to provide safety to all the citizens of Carrboro. as well as savings, and I think we can do both at the same time. I don't think that, I mean, this is the kind of questions that usually come up during the budget and savings discussions, and let's pursue it. Is it just fire that we want to merge? I mean, should we open, explore other areas, or also, I think we have promised that we're going to have more open discussions, and we're going to have meetings in with the neighbors in the in Northeast Scarborough that have been pushing for this issue. So I really want to hear from them directly and have the folks there to, I think it would be a knee-jerk reaction to say, yeah, let's go jump into this right away, because somebody said, I'm paying really high taxes, and yes, we are. But our duty is to have the fire chief in place, to have our team completely in place to deliver the best quality and fire service that we can. But when it comes to cross the bridge of where we merge, when we merge, it's not something you do overnight. I mean, I would like to find out how you do that transition, how many towns have done that and how they do it. Have they done it here in North Carolina or in neighboring states? And there's similar sort of conditions and town size, because it is a big issue, and the town is growing. So, as we grow, we might need two fire departments. Maybe the time to merge was a long time ago. So let's, I think I would pursue both of them. Let's walk and shoot gum at the same time.
Joe.
I just think that when it's such a big issue and so fundamental that we need to have more information. And I don't think, even if we hire a fire chief, I don't think necessarily that the means we don't, based upon whatever information we get, we may decide to merge the fire departments. But I don't think we should leave open the potential of hiring a fire chief. I just think one doesn't necessarily mean the other one's going to happen. And in terms of saving money for the rate base, we all know that may be a fundamental savings, or it may not be a fundamental savings. What we do know is one of the reasons why we are struggling with tax revenue is the way we get tax revenue. So just because we would merge the fire departments does not necessarily mean somebody would get 5 or 6 cents reduced from their tax base. So if we're going to talk about, if this is open about public hearing, then we need to talk about, okay, maybe we have enough residential taxpayers, and maybe we need to think about creating more commercial taxpayers. If this is the time to talk about in the budget, then we need to be looking at that as well. But I don't want to make a fundamental decision and be pushed to a fundamental decision like that based upon a 2 or 3 page memo. And so, my position right now is we can do it, but I still think we should hire a fire chief. I mean, the idea that maybe we need to merge, maybe we should think about, well, if we're going to merge, maybe we shouldn't sign that lease with UNC. And then we could save ourselves the money of spending $1.8 million or how much it costs to build a fire station. But, again, I need more information, and I think the citizens are better served if we have sufficient information.
Jackie.
Not to jump right in here, but
might as well.
This came up 12 or so years ago, or maybe even more, and it's a good thing that it came up. We live in a community where we have a merged school system. We used to have separate, at least lower schools, where we have a merged bus system. Our fire and police departments are very cooperative with each other. I'm definitely in favor of looking at the fire department issue. I think we should also move right ahead with hiring a fire chief, and we should move right ahead with building the new fire station, because whether we are merged or not, we need that. That area needs, you know, we won't have any fewer houses in the combined towns to be serving. I would like us to go ahead and get as much facts, as many facts as we can, so that we can make a decision. My guess is that what we might find, which is what happened 12 and it's probably more than that years ago, is we found that we didn't really need to merge, but there were some things that we could do together, and there were some purchases that we could do together, and there were some further cooperation that led to savings for both towns. So I'm really in favor of studying it. I would not be opposed to merging the fire departments if that turned out to actually save money. I think what we found last time was that it really didn't save any money to merge them, unfortunately, because of some salary differentials. And even if we merged, I don't think that who we hired as chief would lose their job. So instead of just trying to decide off the top of our heads whether we're for it or against it, let's get as much information as we can, but let's move ahead with the things that we really need to be doing, because regardless, we will need to have those things done.
I'd like to suggest that we separate the question, because I think everyone agrees that we need a somewhat substantial report on process and prospects for doing this from the staff, and that we can go ahead and ask for that. And at the same time, I think there's a very simple question that I don't know that we should answer ourselves without hearing from the staff, which is, assuming we were to go ahead, how long would it take, and what would be the implications of going without a fire chief that long? In other words, could we do it without any loss in the quality of our service? And if the answer is no, then of course we go ahead with the hire. But if the answer is yes, then that's something else we consider. And so that's, I think, boiling it down to the kernel of, I think, what Mark and I were kind of getting at earlier, that doesn't necessarily mean we don't do the kind of report Joel and Randy are asking for.
Again, I don't have a fundamental problem with asking staff to give us an initial opinion on the issue. The questions that are still out there floating, though, is, you know, how much information do we need or will we need in order to determine whether or not this is a course of action that we're interested in? This opens up a huge series of issues, you know, which we haven't really talked about. People like to operate on this sort of generalized assumption that consolidation in and of itself always improves efficiency and service. Well, you can ask the folks at Chrysler Daimler whether they really still agree with that anymore, and their stockholders. There are issues of the quality of service, the kind of not just in the global sense, but as well as in the sense of the personalized service that the department delivers to the community and how it interacts with the community. Then comes the whole structure of accountability. Who does this department ultimately answer to as policymakers and from a budgetary standpoint, and how would that whole structure work? So, you know, I'm not trying to throw a wet blanket on the whole thing, but there's a range of issues that are triggered from the original notion which resonate throughout the organization. So, again, I'm not opposed to, again, asking for that initial look, but just want to caution everybody about the kind of the range of questions that we are opening up that are ultimately going to have to be answered.
I think in the context of the fire department, wet blankets are okay, but... where does this how would the board like to proceed with this?
I have both a question and a suggestion. Will tomorrow morning's paper be the first time Chapel Hill's heard of this?
No.
Good. That's real good. Why don't we get together no more than three board members and a staff member, and come up with a list of questions that we would have to have answers to in order to move on with a decision. Just a notion.
You know, I guess all I was trying to get at is that if taking an initial look at the situation, if it was the staff's opinion that this type of thing might save like $10,000 or something like that, then that it's not really, that's not a sum that's probably worth pursuing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if it seemed like it had some implications about whether a Northern Fire Station whether a $1.8 million Northern Fire Station was really needed, or if it had some implications about, you know, that we're into $100,000 and $200,000 worth of ongoing personnel costs, or, you know, in other words, what I'm trying to get at is, it seems to me that if it holds any promise to involve numbers like that, then it's something that's worth spending more time on. But if it's something that involves numbers like $10,000 or $20,000, then it probably isn't worth spending a lot of time on, because you end up spending $20,000 worth of staff time discussing it before you know it, you know? And so that's all that I was trying to suggest is, could we just take a look at the question of, does this really have any potential, or is it just sort of illusory, like you were getting at about Daimler Chrysler? Hopefully we're starting off with something better than Chrysler to begin with in both towns. But
yeah, Daimler Benz is sure taking a hit.
So how do you want to proceed?
Well, that's just my suggestion, is that we ask the staff to give us some reaction, not necessarily right here, right now, but some written reaction to, does it appear that this concept holds much potential? And my suggestion would be that we get that response from the staff, and that if it's the pleasure of the board, we can put it on a future agenda. And if looking at that, it doesn't seem that promising, we can just drop it and be done with it. That's my thought.
Yeah, I don't have a problem asking that early fundamental question, but there's a host of questions which move beyond the bottom line question, again, about service quality, about employee morale and retention.
Sure.
All of those issues are going to have to be taken into consideration. And to answer your question, in fact, Chapel Hill staff commented on this issue in the papers a few weeks ago. It's been floating around over there. I believe that Mark and Kevin had some preliminary conversations about it. So,
well, let's get the answer to Mark's question and then move on. That's
all right.
We also had, if we're done with that topic, at least for now.
Steve's looking like...
Steve wants to respond to some of this now.
Well, it's not so much a response as it is a question, because I'm still a little unclear about what we should be doing in terms of moving forward with recruiting for a fire chief. That position closes out March 3rd. Even a 2 or 3 page report is not something that I'm going to take lightly. And... while Travis and I have broached the subject, because this board has not discussed it, we haven't spent any staff time on it. And he and I need to talk, and I really think to bring you all back something that makes any sense would involve a conversation with the manager and the fire chief in Chapel Hill, because this takes two to tango.
Right. Well, I don't hear any serious interest in slowing down our hiring process, is, I guess, my response to that.
Unless Steve is part of the concern that you're raising, that simply by virtue of the fact that this discussion has taken place, and Mark, I think you were alluding to this earlier, that applicants may go, you know, wait just a minute, I'm not real interested in getting involved in a situation that
appears
to be in flux.
I mean, I do have some concern. I have concern about that already when the issue was first broached. That there might be some really good applicants out there who are in good positions elsewhere. They're saying, I'm not willing to put my name out there and risk my current job for something that might disappear 6 months or a year from now. Now, there's nothing I can measure that by. It's just, I've been doing this for a long time, and just sort of a a gut feeling. But and I've not looked at the applications yet that have come in, and we may have a ton of great applications, and I really hope that we do. But the longer this hangs out there, even if we get a good pool of applicants, when we get to the nitty-gritty of interviewing and perhaps a job offer, it's certainly a question I would have. And I'd be very hesitant if I didn't know the answer to it before I took
well,
the job.
Well, Nat, I guess that's what I'm trying to get to is just that is if we could have a, relatively quick treatment of the subject, it's possible that the answer is that it doesn't hold nearly enough promise to spend any more time on. We can be done with it and be looking whoever we want to make a job offer to in the eye and saying that subject is off the table. So that, but
well, we'll move as quickly as possible. But again, with even with the two or three pages, I want to make sure that we've given you all something that's meaningful.
Yes, well, that would be helpful. okay. We just had two other letters that I saw anyway. One from Maurice Levy requesting again $500 toward the community dinner celebration. And then has anybody seen a copy of this letter from I guess it's basically from the Boland Forest Homeowners Association about various.
That's not really a budget item.
Well, he put it into that context. So I don't know. Anyway, I haven't read it enough to really summarize it right here. So we'll enter it into the record.
I read it, and I also had some conversation with Steve about it the other day, and apparently staff has been meeting with them. And I was going to suggest later, since I didn't know this would come up now, that we could get just a very short status report on that as an information item in an upcoming packet, just so we know.
I'm sorry, Mike and I were having a little sidebar.
I missed the Boland
Forest Homeowners Association letter.
The Cliff Hawk letter.
Oh, okay, I'm with you.
Kind of
gotcha.
What's going on with there, with Adams Track.
Yeah, we have had several staff members met with the Homeowners Association.
Okay, well, maybe at a later time we can get an update on that situation, whatever it may be. Board members.
Really quick, I noticed that Ms. Sharon Cook requested my email address. I have supposed to be forwarding to my johnh@self-help.org, and somehow it's just bouncing.
My email's bounced to you sometimes.
I don't know, John.
I think it's a self-help question because I sent an email bounce back from you all the time.
Did you send it to this address?
To self-help.
I do 80% of the time, but sometimes it goes through.
So. Well, I know we have been updating security and servers.
Well,
that
you're
stuff.
Real secure.
So secure that no emails.
Genuinely impregnable email address.
John, we get through because I never get any bounce back from you. So.
Okay, that's good.
Interesting.
All right. We're stealth fighters, you know.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, we'll work on it. Were there other budget items that board members wanted to bring up tonight? Okay, if not.
Actually. Oh. Yeah, I would like when we get the budget presentation, just an estimate for discussion of what it would cost to get chairs. Yeah, these are 30 years old. Yours are 30 years old. Just an estimate of what it would cost to get new chairs in the boardroom, and then we can decide whether or not to get it.
Okay. What if I found a way to try to do it this year? Would you be willing to look at that?
I'd give you a quarter. Yeah.
All right.
Tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
With the other opportunities, but since this is our first hearing and the spirit of inviting folks to give us input, a lot of the folks I work with, they don't have emails, and they will not even come to this meeting because they don't understand English, to be honest with you. And I was wondering something that some folks have told me that it is a way to, you know, make, to overcome that barrier. I know that's, there is inexpensive translation equipment. Sometimes you can get interns and students and AmeriCorps to do that kind of work, you know, for meetings or key issues, or to host a forum where we actually invite the community and to give it their feedback. Like I think we did, was it 2 years ago? We went to the community, and because even if you get invited, that doesn't mean you're going to contribute much if you don't understand what is being said. And so I don't know if, do we have an accessibility town policy in terms of our services? Like, do we know, in Caldwell is a cutting edge city. And we always, you know, I always brag about my town. And I know we are ahead of the curve in many respects. But sometimes when you get an email like this lady who says, Carvalho, what do you mean? I live 2 years living in Carvalho, and there isn't a single a sound device for pedestrian safety that could have been purchased at no cost to the town and through a grant or something like that. Make me wonder if we should do an assessment or look at basic accessibility issues that folks have to toward services, that make sure that the majority of our population understand the have access to the information that, you know, all the taxpayers should have.
Well, I guess it depends, John, on what you mean by accessibility. I mean, in terms of physical accessibility, the town complies with the Americans with Disabilities Act. You know, over time, the town has done the appropriate reviews of town facilities and so forth to make sure that we meet those requirements. In terms of, you know, accessibility for every resident in town to meet every need that they might have, that, you know, because I'm sure there are people who have particular needs that we have no idea of, and we're certainly open to try to explore how we can reach out to those folks, but we can't always anticipate every need that somebody has if they don't express it, and I guess we need to continue to look for ways to help folks find ways to express it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe on not in everything I know, with the budget that we have, we can do what our hearts desire, but a basic stuff that can impact the most folks, you know, maybe I mean, that's an issue that I think we all are concerned, and the town have done an effort on, you know, translating signs and stuff like that, and that's great. But to get, for example, feedback on this budget stuff, I think it would be good to, you know, host a meeting, a bilingual meeting, or somehow we need to make it accessible, and that could be, you know, maybe through cable, having subtitles in Spanish, or have a summary of key issues in Spanish posted on the website.
John, I just want to ask, are you thinking that if we had translators here, you know, the headphone translators here with someone translating for Board of Aldermen meeting, is that what you're aiming at? Particularly,
ideally, it would be great to do that. I know we don't have the budget to do that right now, but if we purchase the equipment or maybe rent it when we have like charrettes and key meetings that you want people's feedback, or this budget, for example, might be a good investment, you know, to hire somebody and rent that equipment or hire. I mean, I know that community centers buy that equipment, and, you know, it's just headphones, mm-hmm. and then you can get volunteers or hire an interpreter to do that, and that way you get to a large amount of folks that otherwise would not have access.
Jackie?
I think if we had a community meeting where we wanted interpreters, that we could get more than we needed from student volunteers who are looking for experience. because we're telling them they need experience. I think we could get student volunteers to come and act as interpreters at meetings.
Do we know? I can't think right off the top of my head, but do we know do we have any meetings along those lines that are probably coming up in the next year or so? Because I think one thing, you know, I mean, I think it's a great suggestion, particularly for, you know, we did, I guess there's been some discussion about whether we may do an update at some point of Vision 2020 or some of these other documents. And if we do any of the kind of large community meeting where we're, you know, really trying to solicit as many people as possible in Carrboro to come to them, that it's a great suggestion and that it would be worth spending, you know, some money, whatever money, whatever kind of money it might cost to make that happen for particularly for some of the more special events that occur.
Well, our advisory boards. I mean, I know of a lot of folks who says I would love to be on that stuff, but I just can't communicate with the folks. So if we can get some students to commit, you know, to twice a month to come to this meeting, and if we have that equipment, I mean, not talking about more than $5,000 or something like that. I don't know how much it costs, but I know that it's not. We're not talking
okay.
about.
Well, let's take a closer. You know, we'll throw that into the mix here and try to take a closer look at what might be the right way to approach that.
We will be having community meetings on the economic development plan, and maybe that would be a good first step to do it. If we had enough notice and it wasn't in the summer, I'm sure that with that we could recruit students to who would really enjoy being interpreters.
Okay.
We might even find students who are in city and regional planning who are fluent in Spanish, who would enjoy, you know, we could find some kind of cross-disciplinary.
Mixed joy in it all.
Yeah.
Well, I think, okay, well, so that's exactly what I was trying to get mm-hmm. at, is if we know that we're going to have some events like that coming up, then let's at least try it at one upcoming event. And
just to give you, and I will stop here, but to give you a clear example that has happened last week, as a liaison of the TIB, I went to the traffic forum. The Transit Forum in Chapel Hill, not a single Spanish-speaking person was there, and they're trying, TTA and other folks are trying to increase ridership. But guys who could really use and benefit from these buses and will increase this ridership is a lot of these folks who didn't understand that their input was needed. And, you know, although the, you know, people's like, called if you couldn't come to the meeting because it was at night and no childcare was provided, you know, call this phone number and send your question by phone. But if you don't speak English, again, you know, it's like you can't even get the phone number on the screen or ask your question. So it's well, that was a big missed opportunity, but that was a clear example to me that it's like I'm going to bring this thing up because we're missing great opportunities, you know.
I think it's a great point. All right. Anything else from the board right now?
I do want to make one overall
yes.
comment.
Please do.
When we look at the budget, not enough, but when we look at the budget, we need to think about the budget and how it is intertwined with all the other decisions we make and whether or not we bring in tax revenue. So when we decide to write a check to spend, we got to think about how we're coming up with that money. And so I'd like us to keep that in mind as we go through this budget process, because one of the things that we're going to talk about next in this agenda is the architectural standards, and that has an effect on, again, increasing revenue. So I just, that would be my general statement to the board.
Thanks. A few people came in late. I don't know whether anybody wanted to make a comment on the budget. Ellen, if you would come up and borrow Mike's mic.
Okay. Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah, go mm-hmm. ahead.
Okay. The thing down at the Century, the button down at the Century Center was $26,000. That, I mean, if we just had a light that could flash back there, so somebody could see it when I buzzed in to get into the building, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, or something. So you could tell Steve so that Steve could tell somebody else to come get me in. Because the doorbell works great, usually. Second thing is we have asked for those audible signals before. Haven't we, Alex?
I don't know if we've ever actually forwarded a request.
I have asked for them, and the DOT says that they have to be put in a special. It needs to be put in a special way, and that works great where it is audible. But if there isn't any if the audible signal stop working, then we're in trouble.
Right.
So those were my two comments that I've heard so far.
Right. There was a little discussion about both of those issues before you came in. So
I heard.
And we're oh good, okay.
That's why I came.
I see. Okay, great. Well, thank you for coming in and sharing those thoughts.
If we just could put something that blinked right there so that somebody could see the exit sign blink.
Right. I got you.
Or something.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much, John.
That'd be great.
All right.
That would solve the problem.
Okay. And is there anybody else wanted to speak? We had a brief discussion about that issue already. So, okay.
I don't know whether this is time for us to add things that we'd like to see in the budget, or should we wait? Or years ago, we had a youth town hall day. That was really great. And I don't think it cost that much money, and it was taken out. And it involved a series that lasted about 2 months with high school kids who learned about how the town functioned, and it ended in one of those mock board meetings. Kids got a whole lot out of it. This past election cycle, the best debate that I was in, and we had them like every 15 minutes, was a kids group. And they had the best questions. They were the most interested. They knew about town government. And I thought, let's not let this, you know, go to waste. So I'd like us to, and I'm sure that the budget figures are in. It was under Recreation and Parks. I'd like to see about reinstating the youth town hall day, youth involvement.
Okay. With that, I think we are on to our next agenda item, which is a voluntary annexation of the Carrboro High School property.
Okay. The purpose of this item is to receive citizens' comments regarding a petition for the voluntary annexation of the Carrboro High School property located at 201 Rock Haven Road, and to consider the adoption of an ordinance incorporating the property into the town effective February 28th. 2006.
Are there any citizens here to comment on this dramatic issue? If not,
move closing of the public hearing.
Second. It's been properly moved and seconded that we close the public hearing. All those in favor signify by
saying
aye.
We have one more item, number three.
No, we're just closing the hearing just on this.
On
this item.
Yeah.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passes unanimously. Is there a motion?
Move the item.
Second.
It's been properly moved and seconded. All those in favor of annexing Carrboro High School into Carrboro, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I'd say after everything we came up with, it'd be hard to turn down that one.
First of an accession we did there.
Our next item is a public hearing on potential architectural standards for downtown Carrboro.
Okay. This is a continuation of a hearing that was begun on January 24th, 2006. where the board received public comments on a draft ordinance that establishes architectural standards for downtown. The Board of Aldermen continued the hearing to allow additional time for consideration of the draft ordinance. And I believe, Trish, you had a couple of introductory comments, but no formal presentation.
Good evening. At the board's request, staff prepared a memo to follow up to the public hearing, and the memo covers basically three topics, principally a review of an existing building downtown that was approved just prior to many of the changes to the land use ordinance that have come into effect since the charrette was held. Since the charrette was held in 2001. The memo also just provides a little bit more information about two topics that were discussed at the public hearing, how the ordinance applies to the draft ordinance under consideration applies to the location and characteristics of parking within buildings, how the exterior materials provisions, kind of a little bit more information on the exterior materials provisions in the draft ordinance, and then offer some information on a comment that was made during the public hearing about overhead service poles, above ground poles to the property. And I would note for you that since the agenda was copied on Friday, staff in the zoning division, Marty Roop, had a conversation with a Bell South representative, someone he's been trying to get up with for a while, and has some more information about whether or not there are as strict limitations on placing fiber optic lines underground. That is the line that is above ground to 605 West Main Street. So we have a little bit more information on that, and staff will be meeting with folks from Bell South and Duke Power, actually, about the whole issue of undergrounding service lines in the downtown. So happy to answer any questions about the memo or the draft ordinance or anything else that you might need further clarification on.
Just as usual, the memo was concise, to the point, and informative, so thank you for that.
You're most welcome.
Guess we can't get any more comment about it than that. I guess actually we should see whether there's any. Is there anybody from the public who was here to speak on this item? James has already spoken his mind. All right. Board members, where are we with this? We'll start with Joel.
Well, I just think after the conversation and the feedback we've gotten from members of the planning board, members of the architectural community, members of the design community, I don't think that we should have architectural standards that are such that that can't really be used practically. And I think that we should maybe work toward performance standards as opposed to standards of this nature. And I think that we should, along with the consultant, I think we just have to think of something different. I don't think this really works. I think if you have too much a regulatory scheme that doesn't give you what you really are seeking, then we shouldn't have that regulatory scheme. I think we do need a regulatory scheme for downtown, but I don't think we need a regulatory scheme as such as this one. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my proposal would be to create a subcommittee that of both architects, members of the planning board, members of the
ESA.
Right. I was going to the EC, with the Economic Sustainable Commission, members of the Appearance Commission, to get together and develop a group of standards at a performance base, such that if you produce it performance-wise, then you go to the head of the class. If you don't produce it performance-wise, it's similar to the conversation we have with people about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would work better, because then people would at least know at the outset what we really want and what we don't really want. I don't think developing architectural standards, because when I look at the comparison they did, you know, there are some things that it wouldn't it wouldn't comply with now, but a whole lot of it did comply.
Mm-hmm.
So my feeling is that that's the way we should go. But that's my...
All right, let the point-counterpoint begin.
Okay. My feeling is that we are poised to see a fair amount of development downtown, I think within a relatively short period of time. And one big mess up, and downtown is, ugh, you know, one more mess up. I think these standards are fine. One thing that I like about them is in C, it gives folks an opportunity to come and present something better or an alternative to our guidelines that they believe is better. Without standards, you don't get an architect's dream building. You get a builder's dream building. And a builder's dream building is as much that they can get for as least amount of money. That's very different than an architect's dream building. It's not the architects, and we've got some really great people in our design and architect community. It's not their vision that's going up. It's the builder, the owner's vision, the investor's vision that's going up. And that's why we need standards and guidelines. If an architect can come up with something that's attractive, comes to the town and says, this doesn't meet these standards, but we think it'd be really cool. Don't you think it'd be cool? And we go, oh, that's really nice. Then it's fine. Right now, to put us in a longer term of limbo, as there are all kinds of plans that are out there percolating without standards in place, I think we leave ourselves open to some pretty unattractive stuff. I'd like to see us go ahead and adopt this, have it in place, and if it turns out that it is too constrictive or it's not working, then we can go ahead and change it. Right now, because we're so vulnerable, actually, aesthetically at the moment, I'd rather see us err in favor of caution. So I'd like to go ahead and put this in place and see how it works. I think it's good, and it's certainly better than saying, you know, have at it and put up some ugly, blocky things.
I was fully convinced by the various architects who spoke last month that the standards are a bad idea and that there's a strong likelihood that what we would get is the, you know, something that on the face of it met the standard but that was not creative and did not reach the potential that I think we all hope for in the development of our downtown. And in saying that, part of where I'm coming from is that I'm very intrigued by the suggestion that James Carnahan made about revising the burden of proof for the CUP for downtown. And I asked James earlier today if he could elaborate on that. James, do you mind if I share the email you sent me? Okay. Let me just pass this down. The italicized section is what's key, and I'm not saying read it immediately, but if you have a chance as we're talking, I think you know, what James is getting at is a way to allow us to really look at specific buildings and to basically take fundamental principles and seeing how they're being applied in the design. And I think that the result could be much better than, you know, if we have the right people from our board, from the design community, whoever, you know, engaged in reviewing those projects, then I think we'll be in very good shape with that. Let me give a copy. So I guess just to conclude, I mean, I would like to see the staff comment on the workability of this proposal before we do anything further, or in lieu of doing anything further with the standards at that this time, and certainly not, I would not support sending them to the consultant for any further review.
Alex.
That's an interesting process suggestion. I tend to agree, I think, in general with, I think, Dan and Joel's comments, which I see as being fairly similar in approach. I think it would be worthwhile to have the consultant comment on not necessarily the standards themselves that were put forward, but the approach that we're using, which I think is to some degree what you're getting at, although through a different mechanism. I agree with the notion that I thought James Morgan encapsulated it rather nicely when he talked about the difference between proscriptive and prescriptive standards, and that proscription is what we were actually looking for. Identify what we don't like and then create, again, a series of performance standards which allow for a degree of freedom and creativity within the confines of clearly articulating what it is as a matter of principle that, that works for the community, and that's kind of what we're struggling for. So as a process suggestion, I like very much what James has put together and given to Dan as a suggestion for some. These are in many respects principles for performance standards. Joel's suggestion about putting together a process to create a series of performance standards, I think, is bang on. And I would suggest that we follow the process that, that Joel set forward. Jack. Using these as part of the source materials that we're going to work with.
As long as we're at this, I'd like to throw something else into the mix. The whole reason 7 years ago or however it is that we got into the discussion of downtown redevelopment was with the idea of increasing our non-residential tax base. So far, an awful lot of what's being talked about out there is purely residential or 80% residential. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's going to meet those goals. I think that we're looking at some a lot of condos and apartments downtown. So as long as we're going to have performance standards, I'd like us to consider having standards that would say something like, if you are going to build more than three stories, two of those stories, if you must go up to five, or some kind of combination there, you know, must be non-residential, because we could fill up very quickly with a whole bunch of condo complexes with coffee shops downstairs from what we're seeing. And I think this is a very real concern.
And just to respond to that, we already developed the mechanism to deal with that for the B2, right, Mike? That was the B2 district that we were dealing with.
B2 or R2?
R2. Sorry. It was R2. That's right.
R2, B2.
But that we could... Thank you very much. So what you're suggesting, though, is that we can simply broaden the application of that mechanism. That's what we discussed in the retreat, as I recall.
Yeah, that's what I brought up in the retreat, because everything that I'm hearing about downtown, except for that Harris Teeter, it's condos, and it's not affordable condos. It's people that want to get out of building affordable condos.
Actually, that's not true. 300, the Main Street redevelopment is
okay, in terms
of square footage. I'm excluding
the Main Street redevelopment.
Well, you got to be straight up about it when you talk about the chihuahuas in the room, and then the big elephant you push over to the side. So
don't put the chihuahuas in the
discussion.
Other than that redevelopment, the stuff that we're seeing is condos, and I think
I agree,
we need
but you
to
just
come
need to put
up
it in context.
But the point, at least over here, the point's well taken. Both points are well taken. But
Well, but, you know, it's funny because, I mean, that possible grocery store project over where Malat Contracting is right now, you know, is, I mean, that's, in a way, that's exactly the type of development where, you know, I have some particular concern. I haven't seen anything about their plan particularly other than that I heard that they're interested in building a grocery store, but that's exactly the kind of building that I, you know, could be done well or could be done poorly, it seems to me, from an aesthetic point of view.
Mark, let me just ask, maybe I'm missing the point here, but if we look at performance-based evaluation and we look at courtesy review and we look at burden of proof, wouldn't that change the process to capture those kinds of concerns? Now, Teeth?
Those sorts of things sound pretty good to me, but I actually, the other thing that strikes me is that there are at least a few items in this proposal that apparently few people love, but there are at least a few items in this proposal that strike me as very important, and that we ought to go ahead and be really specifically
prescriptive,
some kind of prescriptive about, you know, and I made the point last time and about, you know, ground floor that's composed primarily or exclusively out of parking, I think is, you know, not. You know, there just should be no room at all for that. I don't care about somebody's aesthetic creativity or vision or whatever. That's a bad idea from my point of view. And so I guess this is my concern is I don't want to completely adopt what we've got in front of us, but I don't want to completely shelve it either, because I think there are some things in it that that raise some really good points, and actually I got most of the architects that I talked to afterwards, you know, when pinned down on a few specifics like that, said, well, yeah, that part's not necessarily a problem, you know, I don't necessarily disagree with that part. So I don't know where this leaves us, but my feeling is what I would really love to see is for the planning board. The planning board basically kind of wholesale just said, don't do this and don't do anything like this. I would like to ask them whether they would consider going through this. And, you know, if you want to cut 80, 90% of it out, then fine. But it seems to me that there are a few really good ideas that are in this thing. Somebody else suggested maybe some people from various different boards or whatever, but it's not important to me who it is particularly, but I just feel like it really ought to, some knowledgeable people ought to go through and pick out some of the good points out of this thing and help us narrow it down and focus in on what those are. That's my thought.
I'm not opposed to that, but as it is written now, I couldn't support it. And I really, you know, I want more commercial. I don't know necessarily if I don't want, I know I don't want more expensive condos. But on the other hand, we have to create an economic environment that someone will want to be downtown and that they'll want to stay. I mean, it's no need for us to create a framework where nobody wants to come anyway.
True.
That's my thinking pattern. And I don't mean physically people walking, but physically people investing in the structures to do what they want to do. And I'm not saying that I want to see something that looks ugly, but in the way that it is now, I don't think it gets us to where we want to go. And, you know, I don't have a problem with prescriptions, but you have to realize there are unintended consequences for prescriptions.
I think right now we're getting ready to deal with some unintended consequences of some other things. But if we're going to do this, can we put the Appearance Commission involved in it as well?
Well, that's what I'd suggest.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't, you know, I think the point is for some knowledgeable people to spend some time, a little bit of time on picking out the better parts of this proposal. And it may come back in a very different form, but that's what I would like to see.
I just want to make a comment to kind of take us back a little bit to sort of how we got into the language that you have there. The problem that we're struggling with here is, if I remind you, that what, to the extent that you're seeking to deal with purely aesthetic matters as opposed to other kinds of issues, it becomes, and when we talk about developing standards, it becomes extremely difficult to deal with these issues in a way that doesn't provide essentially no standard, or a standard that is so subjective that it becomes no standard. And I don't mean to by any means pick on the suggestion that was made, but language about maintenance of human scale through architectural detailing is not the kind of language that's going to, it's wonderful language if you're an architect and you know exactly what you mean, but to suggest to this board that would be a standard upon which you would judge an applicant's proposal is simply not helpful, and really provides you with very little in terms of standards. If you're dealing with things that are in essence really what I would say not purely aesthetic, like, you know, Jackie's suggestion as a standard that there not be, I don't know how you phrased it, more than the two stories.
Percentage of residential.
Yeah, I mean, something like that is the kind of standard, obviously, that one can enforce and adjust. But I think the difficulty is we have to keep in mind that has been the essential difficulty. That's how we got into these sets of standards, were derived as a way of trying to avoid those, going to a set of standards that are really essentially meaningless, basically asking a board to approve it if you like it and disapprove it if you don't like it from an aesthetic standpoint. The concept of harmony is what we try to do with the shifting of the burden of proof provisions in the ordinance was to give at least some further definition to harmony. First of all, we flipped the burden of proof to require the buildings in excess of two stories when they get a required conditional use permit, that the burden of showing that it is in harmony would be on the applicant as opposed to opponents showing that it is not in harmony. And then we added some language which is not especially helpful, but at least it is dealing not entirely with purely aesthetic judgments. I mean, there's certainly some judgment calls to be made, and I'm not thrilled with some of that language. But the basic difficulty, again, is to the extent that you're dealing with aesthetics, to come up with standards that are so subjective that they're really not standards at all. They are just sort of statements of sort of general aesthetic goals that each person is going to interpret in their own way, whatever they think human scale is. If they think human scale means the building can't be taller than I am, then that's what they think it is. If they think it's something else, it's something else. It has really almost no definable context. And that's where we got to these standards. So I think you just have to keep that in mind, to ask the planning board or to ask the committee or anybody to come up with aesthetic standards that are just almost meaningless. That's what you're going to be getting back into. If the objective is to ask them to come up with either specific proscriptions, things that we don't want, or a different set of the kinds of standards that are before you, that's certainly something that they can take a look at. But I guess I have a little concern that we would then get into a set of standards that are very subjective, utterly meaningless, and then I'm going to have the same problem with those that I had with the last set.
So what you got to do is picture Mike in court standing up there in front of the 70-year-old judge who's come in from Pitt County and saying, well, Your Honor, it's...
The people that are in our division,
Stokes,
in Wake
if you
County, don't come from Stokes County.
In any case,
we can go to Winston-Salem when I had a very bad experience. That was, we don't want to judge them there either.
But in any case,
I agree with that one.
Wherever they come from, point being, you know, getting up and making this argument about whether it's a pedestrian scale or whatever. You know.
So can we, I was just going to say, can we support that the draft ordinance go to the consultant and get start with that feedback, or?
Actually, I'm going to make another proposal based upon what he said. I think I'm fully aware, and I have all confidence that what's in this email can be quantified with numbers. Mm-hmm. I do. I mean, there's a certain scale that's too big. I think you can take the mayor's comments about there should be no parking as a level. That can be quantified. I think there's some things in this that can be quantified. And I have a lot of confidence in our advisory board that they can do it. I think they can come up with numbers, because the numbers that are in here now, you know, I don't think are going to work. I think they can incorporate. If you come with a building that's over two stories high, then you have to have the following square footage is commercial and the other square footage can be residential.
Just a cap on residential uses.
Right.
As a percentage.
As a percentage. Just the same way we do
that's
with...
what Jackie and Mark were getting at, right?
50 feet setbacks. I think they can do it.
Yeah, I want to just agree with Joel. I agree with Mike that, you know, he picked the squishiest of these seven of what were, you know, what I take as off-the-cuff suggestions from James,
right.
But some of the others, like achieving LEED, that's pretty specific, right. That's or supplying specific. Affordable housing. And the right. fact is that these can be, I believe, as Joel does, that these can be better defined, and I would like to look at doing that. And I do support the idea of sending the proposed standards to the two boards that were mentioned for, you know, looking at what's might be worth keeping in that as a next step.
John.
I have been listening carefully to everything, and I have talked to several folks in the community who knows about this stuff and who cares about this stuff, and I keep going back and forth. You know, I mean, I feel the fear that Jackie has, and I see it in the other folks, but at the same time, I can see the overreaction and the burden of regulations on the aesthetics. And we know, living in a community that is full of artists, we know that stuff doesn't work really well. And I think as James, one day talking to us here, it's like, how do we get, you know, the funky look aesthetics that we have today? You know, what kind of prescription do we get that? And we didn't get it through any prescription or regulations. We got it because this is a free-thinking community that allows for to become what it is today. I do agree that, you know, things are changing, and there are some things, some mistakes maybe has been done. You know, I don't know, every time people refer to the building, the only thing I see is it's a beautiful building paying property taxes that other folks are not willing to pay. And it's very accessible for folks in wheelchairs and people who need to get to an elevator. And, you know, may not look pretty, but it's accessible, and I like that. But, you know, we can always disagree on the aesthetics. I'm not finishing.
Okay.
So I think that what this tells me is we're struggling, and I think this needs more work. I don't mind getting more feedback, be the consultant or through this committee that Joe's proposes. The more, the better. It's going to be cardboard anyway. And I think anybody who's going to build, I mean, somebody told me that building gets used now as an example of what not to build in North Carolina, you know, in our community. So it's like the word is out there. So I think whoever is going to build something, believe me, it's like they would know what not to build. So I don't think nobody is willing to invest money to lose money. People want to build beautiful things that is going to, you know, if you're the owner or the investor, you want to get a return on it, and you want to make sure you can get the most money from it. So, and being cardboard, I think people are going to try to sell us what fits with it. So I like this phone, you know. I mean, the less, I want to keep what has made Carbaro what it is today, and I think keep the good stuff that is in the recommendations, and I think if we take more time on making it better, I think we're going to come up with something much richer and better than what we have today here to prove something just because out of fear, I think it's not healthy.
I don't like my comments being made into simply an emotional stance. What's happening in both of our downtowns right now, both Chapel Hill and Carrboro, we've become hot, and we are seen as an investor's dream. There are people who want to come here to build who don't give a damn about Carrboro or Chapel Hill. They just see it as a really good way to make some money. And they don't really care about the community. You know, our local developers, our local architects and designers, they're not the ones who are going to be doing this. These are people who see this as a really hot investment opportunity. And if we don't say, okay, you're going to come here and make money, you're going to follow these standards so that when you leave, what you leave behind is something that we want to live with for the rest of the life of this community. I don't see that as an emotional stance. I don't see it as fear. I see it as looking at what is happening here and trying to get a handle on it. It's not Carrboro anymore just that's developing Carrboro.
The conversation has inspired one citizen to come into the public hearing if the board's inclined to hear it.
It's a public hearing. They should come on up.
Bob, come up to the microphone, please.
I'm sorry, it's just a simple question. I'm Bob Kirshner. If you don't mind, could somebody summarize what was in the email for us listening and viewing public that didn't have a chance to get any part of that? Yet since he was willing to share it, that's...
Yeah, the essence of it was a proposal. Well, Dan, would you like to try to tackle that?
Sure.
Basically, James wants to tackle his own work here.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. All right.
That makes the most sense.
One comment has inspired another.
Thanks, Bob.
All right.
More like a request.
And I'm here because I want to engage the attorney in the conversation Uh-oh. About this.
Don't take too long.
The proposal is, instead of enacting specific standards, look to the ordinance that we already have and the fact that most of the projects in the downtown now are already going to be subject to conditional use. Mm-hmm. And there's a piece of the ordinance about conditional use that establishes a burden of proof. And what I had suggested was adding some detail to the burden of proof. And this is the question I have, because these are not standards. This is the language and the burden of proof that suggests to the elected officials, whoever they might be, the basis on which to make their decision. And so the language reads, the applicant for such conditional use permits shall have the burden of demonstrating that, if completed as proposed, the development, and then item number two is, will be in harmony with the area and which it is to be located. That's the original language, and then there's some other original language, but what I did was change that language to read, the issues that may be considered to make a finding that a project is or is not in harmony with the area in which it is to be located can include the following: maintenance of human scale through architectural detailing, support for walkability and public transportation, activation of the pedestrian realm, in parentheses, transparency along the sidewalk, parking behind or beneath buildings, supplying affordable housing, providing affordable commercial space, achieving LEED, that is leadership in energy and environmental design certification, responding to Carrboro's historic context, being sensitive to adjacent residential ambience, responding to adopted policy statements in support of vibrant and economically successful and sustainable mixed-use core commercial district. And some of this language, in fact, was in the original burden of proof language. So part of my question for the attorney is, in fact, Because this is not standards. This is really, in my mind, I'm not an attorney. This is suggestive language about that helps the elected officials make a decision where they have broader discretion than they would otherwise.
Well, I think, as I said, the existing one of the standards that we have in all of our conditional use permit requirements is whether the project will be in harmony with the area in which it's to be located. That language has always been problematic because of its vagueness, to start out with. Presently, except for this recently enacted exception, the burden of proof is on those who would object to a project on the basis that it's not in harmony with showing why it's not in harmony. The courts over the years have essentially found, for the most part, that they've tended to almost read out that harmony language. In other words, in the cases that have come up when harmony has been the basis for putting a project down, there were several cases in which the court looked at and said, well, it must be in harmony because if the ordinance makes it permissible in this district, you can't really find it not in harmony with the other uses in the district because by definition they've said it can go there in the first place. And the only times that it's been that kind of language has been upheld, they backed away from that a little bit, but only to the extent of dealing with, I think it was some kind of a mining use or some kind of a landfill use. I can't remember which it was. And it was something that's pretty clearly not in harmony with the residences around it. So that language has always been a little squishy and a little difficult to deal with and very hard to sustain a denial of a project on the basis of it not being in harmony. So we attempted to turn that around and to try and give a little more teeth, a little more definition, and to switch the burden of proof around in the last go-around when we made it the applicant's requirement to demonstrate why the project is in harmony if it is of a certain height. And we added some language, which is, you know, it's still pretty loosey-goosey stuff. And I guess, Mike, so the standard is harmony. The remaining elements that are in the existing ordinance and what you have proposed are just further what I'd call either illustrations or explications of what harmony is. I guess I still feel that to the extent that harmony means it's like something else in the neighborhood for some reason, you at least have some kind of objective criteria to look at it and say, you know, in terms of its scale, it's sort of like that. Or it's not like that. It's you know, it's just way too big for the area. There's something to measure it against. I guess my concern is to the extent that it gets beyond even those sort of semi-objective comparisons to considerations of that really don't necessarily have anything to do with whether it's like or unlike or in harmony with the other things. But if harmony means just I don't like it because it's not very attractive, that's where I think it sort of makes it very difficult to sustain. I'm not sure that's helpful. It's just that some of the language in here that was suggested, I think, increases the tendency to make this appear to be a very subjective aesthetic judgment. You know, the more you push it in that direction, the tougher it is to sustain. The more you can get it objective, the easier it is to sustain. It's about the best I can do with it.
And what I would say is, James, that there are certain things that are physically objective, like, for example, 10-foot sidewalks or a facade that has only a certain percentage of glass or what's ever contained in the certification. Those things are quantifiable. For example, the use of brick, wood, what, you know, whatever, because I don't know anything about building codes. But those, to me, are things that are quantifiable that you can put that would describe walkability, that would describe if you're 10 feet within public transportation, it needs to look physically like X or Y. Does that make any sense? And I think you can quantify that. Like, for example, you wouldn't want, you know, something that's so horizontal. I can't think of what that would be at the moment. But the thing I'm thinking about now is that you probably couldn't put
a copy of the Guggenheim Museum in downtown Carver because it wouldn't fit. But if you quantified the square footage and we want all buildings to be circular, then you could say, theoretically, could you not, if you said all buildings must be circular and they have to be 100 feet wide or what have you.
I think you can make those kinds of, I think those judgments avoid the issue of being entirely subjective.
Yeah. Right. Or you could say we know that the last Economic Development Board report with these factors say X, so if this is X, then we require Y for a certain mix of housing or what have you. But I think they are quantifiable.
Just one other thing that I'll... Yes, I did do these off the cuff. It's interesting that the focus is on the word harmony, and I didn't really realize when I did that. I think that there may be one or two other broad values that we would be after. But leaving that aside, the other thing I was going to say is that the planning board, of course, is at your disposal, however you decide to take these and reconsider and particularly quantify as much as possible.
Alex, you've been waiting.
I'm just going to see if perhaps I can get us to a point where we can...
Please do.
...find some place to shoot this anywhere. something that it seems that there's reasonably broad agreement on is that the regulatory matrix that has been put forward is too prescriptive. However, this language that James has put forward gets us back into that same feedback loop of what's too vague and how do we quantify it, and has the town attorney gobbling tums. So I think Mark and Joel's suggestion, again, that we take this combination of materials and approaches and indicate what sort of the general tenor of the board is and ask, again, the Planning Board, the Economic Sustainability Commission, Appearance Commission as being knowledgeable people. And again, the ESC and the Planning Board have largely mirrored one another's viewpoints. It's been worded differently, but frankly, their perspectives seem to be very similar as we've gone through this process. But they haven't been asked to proactively give us some sort of alternative approach. And I would recommend that we do just that. Just leave it lie for right now. Send these proposals back to those boards. Let them chew on it. Ask them to bring us back a recommendation based on the idea that, again, what we've been presented with is too prescriptive. So look for some specific proscriptions, right, that are perhaps somewhat less detailed but will help give us more guidance while empowering a series of performance standards based on some of this language that we've been presented with. Does that sound like a reasonable way to go?
Sounded like a motion to me.
Second.
Yes, you got it.
Right.
All right, Jackie.
I'd like to see, I guess I could support that. I'd like to see some of the designers and architects that came to the public hearing earlier invited to weigh in with those committees.
Absolutely. If they aren't part of this and this whole thing blows up, right, we're going to have the same bloody conversation.
Well, because if we could institutionalize some of their ideas so that when we do get, you know, I don't care about Carborough people here, then people who do care about Carborough will have weighed in on it.
Let me ask you this. How about if we throw into the mix as well? Remember we discussed the idea that it was that this was pushing to the surface, again, reconsidering formalizing the concept review process.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
That as part of doing this, frankly, that process change may help resolve a lot of these issues, right, if we arrive at a concept review process whereby somehow we can institutionally include the expertise that we have in the architectural community to deal with this, right, and ask these boards to tackle that question as well in concert with this.
I think it also couples the need for caution, as Jackie pointed out earlier, with I think it was James Morgan who was talking about the evolving process of architecture. that we want to be able to not be thinking of yesterday or today, but where we want tomorrow to be in terms of materials and technology and building.
And can we attach a timeline for this, perhaps in some regard?
That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Ask the boards to report back to us in, James, 90 days? James is nodding yes. Okay, Nathan's not in the room, but Nathan's getting volunteered to report back to us in 90 days.
It would be like mid-May would be about not heard. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
that's, that's good. That's meaningful. All right, that sounds like a good motion and second there. I just have one other comment on not exactly on this proposal, but I want to throw out there this other thought, which is that a lot of this has been the flavor of a lot of this up to this point has been about steps that whether or not we should take certain steps that at some level make it harder to develop real estate in downtown Carrboro, and I hear the reservations that are coming from some of the board, and I share some of those reservations about that because, you know, that isn't the goal, but it's a possible consequence of what we've been talking about here. But I want to throw out the thought that, I constantly am stumbling across the sort of amazing details of our development ordinance, and I don't. You know, we don't necessarily need to take action on this now, but I think one of the things that we may want to consider coming out of this economic development consultant process is taking a look at the table of permissible uses or whatever it's called and the types of permits that are required for different types of land uses. And the reason I point this out is, for example, that came to my attention the other day that there has been at least, and I don't want to be alarming about this because there's you know, all kinds of people call up with all kinds of ideas that are pretty far from actually happening. But, for example, the planning department has been contacted by people who wanted to open, like, an advanced auto parts or auto zone type of retail establishment. And without getting into, you know, whether that would be the merits of that type of idea or even where exactly they were proposing to do that, it turned out that in the particular zone where they were looking at doing it, that they would need that all they would need, no matter the size of the store to be open, that all they would need is a zoning compliance permit from the town, and. You know, I just throw that out there. It seems to me to be really surprising that you would be able to build that type of building or open that type of facility with only staff level review. On the other hand, you know, if somebody proposed, and I guess the industry is not really headed in this direction, but if somebody proposed to open another auto parts store along the lines of the existing one on Main Street, East Main Street, you know, I think, well, whatever, you know, I mean, a 3,000 or 4,000 square foot auto parts store, I don't have much of an opinion about that, but a 30,000 or 40,000 square foot auto parts store, it doesn't really have to do with it being auto parts. You see what I'm trying to get at? And so there's something that's kind of odd about the way our ordinance works in that regard. At the same time, I would point out that in the same zoning district where the proposed auto parts store or contemplated, I should say, auto parts store would have been, one where we would be able to open an advanced auto with a zoning permit. In that same zoning district, if you wanted to open a child care center, you would need to come before this board and get a permit from this board to open it. So, in other words, it would be like a 12 to 18-month approval process to open a child care center on that site, but to open an advanced auto parts would be zoning compliance permit from the staff. And I just throw it out there that that didn't really, I know nobody intended for the ordinance to work out that way, but that does seem to be where it is, and that just doesn't make any sense at all.
But it doesn't even make more sense when it's harder for you to develop an affordable housing development
right.
than it does for you to put a 40,000 square right. foot auto zone.
Right.
For example. So, I think there are some much, in a way, there are some much bigger picture issues here that bother me about our development ordinance. So, anyway, all those in favor of Alex's motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Can we include in that thinking about having a certain percentage have to be commercial?
Sure.
Sure.
It's one of the things we discussed, so I think that's one of the things that we kick on.
Just ask them to look at the mechanism that was developed again for R2. Why reinvent the wheel?
Sure. I mean,
we put it together, so.
Okay.
We can fudge the numbers and the applicability.
Since you kind of have a suggestion on zoning, something I've been thinking along those lines of what stuff we don't want to see here. And Joel, help me out. You know more than I do on this issue. We had successfully stopped the payday lending industry from, you know, having this pay advance predatory outlets all over the state of North Carolina, and they rent a shutter and, you know, to continue doing the business, and they have gotten in trouble, but I'm sure through the internet and otherwise they're going to continue to figure out ways to keep ripping people off, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And I would love to see if there's some way to ban these people for life in Carrboro. I mean, in a way like this, using the crafting an ordinance the same way I think the Durham City Council did in order to avoid a adult dance club being built in their, in a certain perimeter or something like that. I would love to see us crafting something to repeal and keep all those sharks away from Carrboro and all the working class and only from the people of Carrboro.
There's one here now, in fact. I don't know whether we could. That's something we could do, but if it was something we could do, I would be interested in doing it. Say that. Maybe we could ask that.
We probably need a report from staff.
We hear back from the staff about that that issue in writing.
Issue had been raised before, and on the other hand, maybe things have changed, but there were some issues regarding interstate commerce and that made it difficult, but I don't remember why we didn't go further with it.
It had passable communities, and I think when we raised it, there was a business already in Carrboro, so we didn't want to, like, kick them out. But they have been suspended from operations, and there should not be any pay advance operator lending a shark functioning right now in Carrboro. They have been
I don't know really much, banned. If anything, about the subject. I'm pretty comfortable. The zoning wouldn't be the answer, because that's I'm not really sure how you just if you're trying to distinguish something on the basis of the rates that they charge folks or the period of loans and that sort of thing, that's not a land use issue. I mean, I think it's it would, if it could be regulated at all, it would have to be regulated under just the kind of business licensing or business regulation authority that you would have to regulate other businesses, like, you know, pawn shops or whatever.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether we're preempted by the state.
Well, there is a whole big federal preemption issue that's embedded in that.
But I'm sure it's not a zoning question. So whether it could be otherwise regulated, I don't know, because I've never looked at it. If the board wants me to do that, I'll.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Can we build an adult nightclub in Carrboro? Today somebody comes in and wants to do that.
I know you want tax revenue, John.
I know. Not that bad. Hey,
there you go.
Kids don't make good money.
Well, the answer to that is presently we don't have any regulations against that. Other places do, but that particular thing has been dealt with by way of dealing with the so-called secondary effects of such establishments. And one can regulate through zoning, and there's common ways that one can do that. Carver has never chosen to adopt those kinds of regulations. It's something that could be done. It just never has, either because of philosophical reasons or because of it's not been a problem.
Isn't that interesting?
We don't have...
Usury and lust are two things that...
I find it interesting that you can ban, like, nudie people, but you can't ban people from... from stealing money from poor people. That's an interesting...
Because that's business.
It's an interesting set of values. Yeah.
I think it might be fair to say that the federal government is in charge of the issue of stealing money from poor people.
I'm not saying that you can. All I'm suggesting is that it may be that I don't know enough about it. What I do know is that there are significant land use... or there has been perceived to be significant land use differences between and land use implications between the type of clientele and the type of impact on residential areas and all that sort of stuff, between adult establishments and other forms of entertainment or restaurants and that sort of thing. I don't know anything about predatory lending institutions, whatever that may be. I don't even know what it is, really. But
they're more harmful than nightclubs.
Yeah, they're not real good for communities.
I guess if there were particular land use aspects of it, I guess my initial inclination was just that if the issue is you have an office and people go in there and somebody gets charged higher interest rates than somebody else, and it's not a question of crowds forming and the type of people that tend to go there and its implications for... You know, in other words, if it's just that they're doing a very bad thing, but they're because they're charging higher interest rates in other places like banks, I'm not sure that it creates a land use issue dealing with the land use implications, the parking demands, the overflow traffic, all that sort of stuff. So it really wouldn't create a land use issue. It would create a regulatory issue that we could perhaps deal with, like I say, like pawn shops or other things where you'd have to deal with. Again, I think... there may be some serious preemption issues in terms of...
Yeah, there are. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, if it can't be... what sounds like what you're telling me is it can't be addressed through our doesn't sound like something that can be addressed through our zoning ordinance. And if it can't be addressed through our zoning ordinance, then there's probably just not much that we can do about it, frankly, because higher political powers than us are already fighting that fight on the sort of federal preemption issues and all of that stuff. So, not to be defeatist about it, but just that's where it is. As long as we're talking about this topic, our state attorney general Roy Cooper deserves a lot of credit for taking the lead on suing these people and trying to expose them for what they are.
I think I didn't hear the attorney saying you cannot do this. I hear him saying he has not researched it and doesn't know enough about predatory lending and usurial practices. And I think if we can do it, we don't know right now. The guy, at the federal level, the guy is being charged with corruption and other charges. From the industry that is being proposing the bill, so that's not going to happen anytime soon. So I think we have a duty to at least protect our own folks and our communities at our own level. And if we can just research the question,
to
do it.
Must be another town in America that is looking at this issue. So
well, I can check into it. I can check with the. The International Municipal Officers, bunch of National Attorneys Association, whatever we're calling ourselves these days, the municipal attorneys. I'll check with them and with the league, and we'll see what we can find out.
All right. Thanks very much.
Not to launch a whole other tangent on this, but one other option is to look for ways to provide a non-predatory alternative to give people access to their funds on payday. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, sort of to put them out of business by doing
an honest business next door. Yeah. All right. Matters from the clerk.
We didn't do the appointments.
Oh. My bad. We are on agenda item E, which is a whole lot of appointments.
Move the resolution.
Wait, I wanted to add some names.
Okay.
for the Environmental Advisory Board, I wanted to add Carolyn Buckner.
Oh, yes.
There were two seats open and only one person suggested, so I was just going to suggest Carolyn Buckner.
Who has been very active in letting her interest in that be known, and also is a new resident of Carrboro.
Yep. Who else?
Okay.
Involuntary new resident of Carrboro, if you see what I'm saying.
The other person that I thought, because he did have it checked as one of the things that he wanted to be on, was Joseph D. Mathis. On the Arts Committee.
Okay.
And if you look at his, he has a degree in studio art, graphic design. He had both Arts Committee and Downtown Development, and I thought, well, you know, what the heck?
Anybody else?
Carolyn's name is on here already. So is there some adjustment?
Where is she on there?
Where is she on there? I didn't see her online.
She's only being on one board.
She was particularly interested. She told me she was particularly interested in the
environment. Because on the resolution, okay, attachment A, it didn't have her on EAB, and I'm
looking at E1, and it's just it's the layout of the grid.
Okay, that one is the one that says all the people who apply.
Right.
And okay, then I just
saying, put them, make a point. Joe and Carolyn.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that was my suggestion. So gotcha. Those were the only ones. And the only other thing is, could someone let me know when we're going to get the appointments for the Recreation and Parks in March instead of someone would just let us know why we had to wait until, why we were waiting until March, because I know there are three spots open. And I know the Recreation and Parks Commission had been down a couple of people, so I guess that would just be my question.
Can I ask a question, please?
Sure.
You recommended someone for the Arts Committee, and I'm liaison to the Arts Committee. And, we are full because there's a person who hasn't submitted an application, but the chair supposedly has it, and she was going to make that recommendation, although the date she thought she had more time in which to do that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll withdraw Mr. Mathis, but I think that it would be helpful to know that. It would be helpful to know that, and then maybe just to resubmit his application along with that other person, so the board can, you know.
Okay, so should she do? Should she?
I don't have a problem with whatever the recommendation is. I just think that, you know, we're not knowing that in the packet, then I just assumed, oh, well, there's another spot open.
Right.
But I still would reiterate my suggestion for
Carolyn
Buckner.
All right. So with that one.
I have a couple comments. Only one of which pertains to the actual appointees. You know, we've talked about trying to get people from the recently annexed neighborhoods on some of these boards, and I've noticed that some have applied. I took note of, like, Elena Kalamanis and Stephen Klosick, for example, and the boards that they've applied for, I think the people are being proposed. It makes sense, those appointments, some of which are reappointments, but perhaps someone could communicate to those citizens that there are other boards that we in fact have openings on that we would encourage them to.
I was planning on communicating just in a moment what some of the other vacancies we have, because there are some that we have no applications for example.
And the other thing is, and I'm not sure, having not done this before, what the proper protocol on this is. But on the planning board, I noticed that among the names that I recognized anyway, Mary Rabinowitz is recommended, and we also have Elena Kalamanis and Lydia Lavelle who applied for that. And, I mean, I'm not at all suggesting that Mary is not well-qualified or the best appointment, but I did not gain an understanding from the materials presented, you know, of, like, say, looking among those three, for example, from the recently annexed areas, you know, why, if that was part of the rationale, and why Mary as opposed to either of the other two.
Well, the chair of the planning board's here.
Well, and it would be good to hear from him on that. And ironically, one of the things that we don't have any applicants for is a representative from the transition area on the planning board.
But they're not in the
transition area. Well, they're not transition
anymore. And that's why it's ironic.
Mary actually lives in that area, though.
No, I know that.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So she really...
I don't think it was any comments against Mary. It's just pointing out, I think he was just pointing out that there are three people who applied who all live
right.
in the recently
That's right.
annexed
That's
area.
Exactly right.
Mr. Chair, if you would, just briefly.
I don't think Dave's applied for
anything. How this came about is that I received the applications that were in hand in late December, and was asked by the town clerk to supply recommendations by the end of January, which coincided with the alderman application process, which I was a participant. And I decided to proceed with my recommendations in advance of that process, A. I decided to ask you to reappoint Heidi Paulson because she's a good incumbent. And second, I wanted to appoint somebody from the annexed area. And I'm acquainted with Mary, and so I called her and asked her if she would be interested in applying for that. And she said yes. I didn't anticipate that other applicants for the alderman process would make applications. And so, in fact, at the time, the applications that I were considering were those did not include Elena Kalamanis or Lydia Lavelle.
Thanks.
Okay.
I noticed with more than one of the advisory boards, there were many fewer people. There were fewer people appointed than were needed, and fewer people appointed than there were applicants. And it seems like if we really need people, why were they not filled?
In other words, for example, the Appearance Commission, there's three vacancies, there's two applicants, and there's only one person recommended.
Right.
For example, not
yeah.
to pick on them.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. I also had brought up a couple times, both at the retreat and before, that I really think that we should have one seat on each advisory board, that for the next couple years, if a person from the annexed area applies for it, a person from the annexed area gets it. So that, you know, every committee in this town has an annexed person on it, at least for a couple years until things are integrated a little better.
At least the next 17 months.
Yeah. I don't know.
But mainly I want to know why there are fewer people appointed than applied when there are still openings. Because I don't want people getting appointed who are just like the people who are already there. I think we need people who we disagree with and who have opposing points of view, and that's how we create balance.
Well, we could appoint Gene Ward on the Appearance Commission, but I think one of the requirements that we asked the chairs of the committees were to actually talk to the people,
right.
applicants. So.
And the applicants were asked to come to a meeting to
right.
gauge their,
right.
their true
right.
interest, and it
right.
may be people didn't show up to meetings
right.
and weren't really interested.
Why don't we just ask for a report back then?
Chairs
report back?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
How about that?
That's fine, and I think we could go ahead and also point out that the Board of Aldermen wishes to hear recommendations for appointments of folks who live in Northeast Carrboro onto our various advisory boards.
And disseminate those. You were going to disseminate those for which we still had vacancies to encourage.
Yeah.
Right.
And in fact, I'm just going to read that really quickly. We have special seats reserved for people in our extraterritorial jurisdictions in certain situations. So We need somebody on the Board of Adjustment from the transition area, which is basically the northern extraterritorial jurisdiction for the town, folks north of Homestead Road who do not live within town limits. And same thing with the Planning Board. We need somebody from that area. We need folks who live in our jurisdiction but outside of our town limits on our Parks and Recreation and Parks Commission.
Is the school rep, is it for someone from the school board or, I'm sorry?
No, that's exactly what I was just pondering when I paused.
What's that seat for? Can anyone?
What does it mean to be a school rep?
Yeah, is it a teenager? Is it a adult who has a child in school?
I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Well, we probably shouldn't fill it till we know what it is.
Right. Well, I'm asking.
We could.
No, we don't have any. But, for example, one of the people in the in-town application could maybe be the school rep because some of those individuals indicated that they have children in the school system. So school rep. You know.
Okay, well, maybe we can particularly, since we don't have any recommendation from Recreation and Parks, we can maybe particularly make that point to them to search
that
out, that situation out. We have, what is our cable TV committee, and do we really need appointees to it at this time?
See, the problem is, having been the liaison of the cable TV community, you just don't have a lot of authority based upon the preemption by the federal government of what you can do. And, you know, that is the problem, I would say.
Yeah,
I think that's right. It's a committee that probably had a very useful purpose some years ago before all of the deregulation of the cable industry, but now it's rare that there's an issue on which they really can do much with.
Okay.
So that would be my comments on the cable committee.
All right. Well, if you want to be, if you're interested in being on this fantastically powerful committee, a number of vacancies. Also, there are a number of plenty of vacancies on the Cemetery Commission, and
plenty of lads.
And there's at least, I wasn't going to go there. There is at least. At least one vacancy, although there are a number of applicants, there's at least one vacancy on our town arts committee.
And the human services.
There's at least one vacancy on the human services commission, even after we make these appointments right now.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, the ordinance simply says that there should be a Recreation and Parks Commission composed of 11 members appointed by the Board of Aldermen. One member shall be selected from the Board of Aldermen, and one shall be selected as a representative from the local school system. So beyond what those words say, I don't know what that means, I guess.
So that almost sounds like maybe we're supposed to get the school board to.
Right. Well, maybe we should.
I think probably the intent was because there are various ways in which there's cooperation between the town and the school system.
There.
But exactly, it doesn't say it has to be a school board member. It doesn't say it has to be a teacher. It could be, you know, just some sort of representative from the school system.
Still, it might be good if it was somebody with a mandate from the school board, for example. But
why don't you draft a letter to her and see
so
if there's somebody
can
that
we
wants
work
to do
up
that?
A letter to the school board asking them to put forward a name for the Recreation and Parks Commission.
Here's a lot of what ails me.
Okay.
I just want to raise one other point before we vote on this, which is on the Transportation Advisory Board, we have a reappointment, which I assume we always want to make reappointments unless there's a reason not to. And then we have someone who is a bus driver, and I think it's a good idea to have someone who's a bus driver on the Transportation Board. But I think we should be clear that we're choosing not to appoint someone from the Northeast area to that seat and doing the bus driver instead. So we do have sort of conflicting goals there in that particular appointment.
I don't think we've ever had a bus driver, though, before. Have we?
Yeah.
Have we? Okay. I think it's just helpful to have one bus driver. Yeah, okay. Well,
that's good.
Okay.
I mean, but I do understand where you come from.
Right. I think.
So I just want to clarify one other question regarding. You said there was one opening on the planning board for an ETJ.
Actually, it says here a northern transition area resident.
So is it not possible to go back to the folks who applied and pull one more person from the newly incorporated area because they are really a reassignment? How does that work?
I think there's actually some legal requirements
right.
that we have about
that
the
NTA, okay.
that they really have to be yeah. from.
So the newly incorporated area would not be included.
The ETJ no. and the transition right. area are two different
areas. I know.
Well, that's true. That's a good point.
So.
Yeah.
That's why I'm asking it, because I think it might be well worth our while.
This issue. No, it's good. That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Transition area as opposed to
northern study area. Northern.
No, transition area is in transition area. Right. But right. the ETJ,
ETJ right.
is.
Right.
Yeah, that's a statutory deal.
Right.
But.
Boy, that was technical, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's everybody lost, yeah.
Statutory.
Okay, theory. Now that Jennifer's leaving, let's do something outlandish.
And the winner is?
Like to okay. vote on the appointments.
Skater.
I've been watching it. Man, did y'all see the ice dance? The
Sasha Cohn is
performing. Are you all waiting for me to respond
yeah.
to that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm so believing this way. I wouldn't. Okay. Well, I can do that now.
Being so respectful.
I did.
We're talking about the Olympics.
I thought you were out there thinking. I didn't know.
No, not all of them.
No, we're like thinking.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking.
All right. Anyway, it says there shall be a planning board consisting of 11 members. 7 members appointed by the board shall reside within the town. 2 members appointed by the Orange County Board of Commissioners shall reside within the town's ETJ, town's extraterritorial planning area. 2 members appointed by the Orange County Board of Commissioners shall reside within the town's joint planning transition area.
Ah.
Joint planning.
And then it says if the board of the Orange County Board fails to make these appointments within 90 days after receiving a resolution requesting that they be made, the board may make them. So actually what you're really doing is requesting the Orange County Board to appoint members to each of these two positions.
Okay.
But
right. it doesn't say unincorporated.
Well, what is the joint planning area
I don't
in
think
that sense.
So there's nothing
it's
about
not
the northern
in town.
So it's the you've got 2 members that are supposed to be appointed by the Board of County Commissioners within the town's extraterritorial planning area.
Right.
And then 2 members shall reside within the town's joint planning transition area.
So here's the question is are the recently annexed neighborhoods, the Northeast Scarborough neighborhoods, would they be considered a part of the joint planning area?
No.
Not after they're annexed.
So it
almost makes you wonder what is the difference between our extraterritorial jurisdiction and.
Right,
and
that's
clear. I mean, this is the ETJ here.
Right.
All this is.
Uh huh.
And this piece of property right here. And then anything that's not in the city limits is the transition area.
Right. So mm-hmm. which position is the one that's still unfilled?
The joint planning area.
There's no transition.
Both of those are the Board of Commissioners.
ETJ,
yes.
And we lack one ETJ and we lack one transition.
Aha, uh-huh. One and one.
So we send a letter to the county requesting appointments. They've got 90 days. If they don't have anybody in the 90-day period that they send, we can appoint who we want, right?
Okay.
Well, it doesn't say that. Actually, what it says is that, it really just says that you can make the appointments. It's basically saying that if you ask the Orange County Board, for example, if you have a transition area resident that you're recommending that they appoint and they don't do it within 90 days, then you can do it.
Okay.
But it does not say that you can appoint anybody from any area that you choose to.
Yeah, it would still have to be somebody from the ETJ.
Right.
Or
okay.
Whichever, whatever.
Too bad.
Whatever alphabet soup is applicable in the situation.
So, therefore, we can nominate folks from this list?
I think probably not, because
what's our process?
Well, I mean, only if any of those applicants live in,
they have to live
outside
in that area.
But you have to live outside of town limits to meet either definition, basically.
And all those people in that block are in-town applicants.
They are now.
Well,
now, what may be possible, I'd have to take a look at this. There's this very complicated and strange statute that requires some sort of percentage representation on these extracurricular boards, and then for just ETJ members. But part of the difficulty is our ETJ is becoming relative. I don't think there's a huge population
of ETJ.
Not very
many people live in our
right.
ETJ.
So we could look at the composition, and if it turns out that we're having difficulty getting representatives from either the ETJ or the joint planning area, because obviously the transition area gets smaller as the town gets bigger.
Right. Exactly.
That what we may be able to do is adjust while keeping the 11 members, instead of having it be 7-2-2, maybe it could be 9-1-1. I don't know. I'd have to do a little checking into that.
Could you check on that?
That'd be great. That would be great.
It could certainly obviously be. It could be, you could enlarge the number of members, but you know, we may not want to get 11 is already a pretty good sized board.
Let me
take a look at all that. Of course, no, Roy's helped to figure out what we can do under the statutes,
okay.
And if you can change those, the composition, the membership
right.
composition, that might be something you might want
right.
to consider.
And then, of course, that we can do. There's a question about whether they're actually getting this particular cable broadcast in those areas. But anyway,
they're not, because they're in the Chapel Hill thing, and then they won't cross over, and of course
right.
the cable committee can't do anything about it. But
in any case, we would certainly welcome applications to the Board of Adjustment or the Planning Board from the joint planning area to the north of our town limits. We also need somebody from the extraterritorial jurisdiction to the south of our town limits. Okay. Moving along. So the motion on the floor, I believe, is to appoint all of these people who've been recommended, plus Carolyn Buckner
That's
to
correct.
The Environmental the Advisory Board.
Yep.
Pending
right.
the attorney's findings, and then we'll add people at a later date if
right.
we can.
Okay.
I'll second that. Is that
took a long time for an agenda item that I was going to completely skip, didn't it? All
right.
It's been moved and seconded. The mover was
Alex.
Yeah.
Was Alex, and the second was from Randy. And all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
Mark, I have one more point on this agenda
sure.
item, if you don't mind, which is I found the material in the packet not ideal for understanding these appointments. And I really appreciate, and I think it's appropriate for the board chairs to interview these applicants and make recommendations to us, and I think that's very valuable. But I would like to get better information on why those appointments are being recommended. And I have two suggestions along those lines. One is that we ask all board chairs to, in at least a sentence or two, summarize the qualifications of each applicant and for the people they are proposing or recommending, that they say specifically what it is about that person that sets them apart in terms of the work of that board or the need for diversity or whatever value is informing that recommendation
mm-hmm.
so that we can understand that. Because, I mean, these are the people we're choosing to advise us, and I feel like we need better information. The second suggestion I would have is that each of us who is a liaison to a board, that we get the recommendations in advance. Well, we certainly get them 4 days in advance of our discussion, and that as liaisons, we have a conversation with the chairs who are making the recommendations to make sure that we understand why and can speak to questions that come up. Like tonight, there were a number of questions that we didn't know the answers to. And I think we could know, you know, just on the basis of what could be a very brief conversation. So I'd like to make those two suggestions for improving this process.
Good.
All right. Well, we will understand that that is how we're going to proceed. Is this on committee appointments?
No, we're done with this.
Okay, let me just run down that crowd over there real quick. Was there anything from the clerk?
We didn't vote on it, did we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
I was all in favor.
You voted.
Were you going to vote?
Okay, we do actually.
Thank you for that little trip back in time.
Mr. Manager, Mr. Attorney. Okay. Matters from the board. I have one appointment issue for the board to talk about in just a second.
I just have a brief matter, which maybe I should have brought up earlier when we were talking about the architectural standards, which involves, well, let me put it to you this way. The building heights issue has been of incredible interest internally. In fact, we've basically been, you know, beating it like a recalcitrant mule. However, in the neighboring jurisdiction, there is a proposal on the table to do 9 stories right at the border, and I find the silence from over here to be rather deafening and surprising.
You didn't hear me when I read it.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
the funny thing is, it's been floating around for a while, and nobody said anything. And well, I just find that kind of, well, nobody from our side has looked at it and said anything.
Well, I didn't know about it until I read it in the paper. So,
well,
I don't like it.
Well, my point being that while I'm hesitant to meddle around in the affairs of other jurisdictions, that's a border issue. And there are likely to be very substantial impacts, both aesthetically on neighborhoods that are Carborough neighborhoods, as well as on our infrastructure. And we have a traffic study in process, which I don't believe contemplated use of that scale. So you may be surprised to hear it coming from me, but something of that scale and that height and that location gives me substantial concern, and I think it bears this board's attention.
Getting more conservative now, eh?
No, I'm just saying that, you know, you can ding me on 5, but you start talking about 9, and it's a different
and
story.
Your eyes pop.
You know?
Well, I it's obviously a decision ultimately for the Chapel Hill Town Council to make about that.
Right.
Now, they're coming on stuff we do. I mean, not even trying to make it cute, but you're the man, so that's what you have to do.
Yeah, it's going
to
be difficult. And I do have some aesthetic, you know, concerns about it, but on the other hand, the aesthetic aspect of it, I mean, that is for Chapel Hill to deal with and make their own decisions about. Yeah, I mean, I think especially parking and traffic issues are of some real concern, and I'm, you know, but on the other hand, I do think, you know, those issues, let me put it this way, those issues are certainly not lost on the Chapel Hill Council as well.
And this is delicate, but by the same token, there's been a lot of talk about the need to engage across municipal lines, and frankly, it goes both ways.
Absolutely.
I, in the interests of disclosure, I mean, I was involved in what I consider a minor conflict with Chapel Hill regarding the transit corridor, and they had a different philosophy of how they wanted to do it, but that was truly an interjurisdictional issue.
Right.
And so we ultimately crafted, or I crafted anyway, language which was supposed to be noncommittal enough that it left the issue open. Some people weren't happy with that. And that's too bad. However, I think this is, again, another interjurisdictional issue where the interests are intertwined as a result of the scale of what's being proposed. And obviously, I'm not suggesting that we want to try to impose our will or our philosophy or our aesthetics on our neighbors, but I think we have a legitimate interest in reviewing what the impacts are likely to be.
I mean, it'd be interesting to think about what, and I would be glad to, I mean, I would be interested in just taking that comment to heart and thinking about what kind of appropriate way we might be able to give some input on or get some information about the project.
I guess I would. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean I don't. You know, I don't necessarily want to craft a strategy right here at this moment without having thought about it some. But it's a good point you raise. I think the other thing I would point out is, I know I understand from the mayor of Chapel Hill that there has been some discussion among Chapel Hill Town Council members about coming and talking to us about some type of small area planning process or that type of thing for the eastern end of our downtown and the western end of their downtown to try and just have some kind of coordinated approach to growth and planning. And I don't know where that really stands right now, or I don't know whatever became of that discussion with among the town council members, but this is sort of the microcosm of that discussion.
Yeah, and that's kind of a new wrinkle, given the fact that we're still working on the back end of a 5-year planning process. So is the idea here that somebody wants to go back to square one from another jurisdiction and start all over?
I think what inspired, well, I know that what imminently inspired the idea was our discussion about the possibility of a four-way intersection at Cameron Avenue,
right,
and Merritt Mill Road.
Right, that's all tangled up in that transit corridor discussion.
Well, it could be. It could get there anyway. So I don't know. But
this is great.
Well, in any case, what all I was suggesting was that we ask staff to look at it. The OST.
Well, Roy just came up to me. The Chapel Hill Planning Director has contacted our planning staff. They haven't received a formal application yet on that project. They are planning to send the information over and asking the town of Carborough for a courtesy review of that project. So.
You guys are ahead of me. Then I'll just shut the you-know-what up, and we'll get out of here.
Okay, well, let's be sure that we follow up on that, I guess, is the upshot of that discussion.
Right.
I got three quick items. One is I'm also looking at what's going on in Chapel Hill, and this is just for people having their heads, is they reviewed a project or heard from a project last night that's a 471,000 square foot office building being proposed for Barbie Chapel Road near the Friday Center. And I don't want to get into a discussion, but I think in terms of when we think about where our commercial, how we're going to get commercial growth, and certainly simplistically, we can understand why an office building wants to be there, perhaps, mm-hmm. rather than in Carborough. But I just wanted to throw out that, you know, things are happening, and some of them aren't happening here. And, you know, we probably don't want that scale building necessarily, or maybe somewhere we do. But anyway, second point, I ran into Alan Spalt this evening. I said, Alan, so are you going to be the alternate on the Caroline North Committee? And he said, first I heard about it. I said, well, I'm honored to invite you to be our alternate. He agreed, which leads me to my third point, which was I ran into Alan at Internationalist Books, and I don't know if everyone's aware that Chapel Hill declared today Bob Shelton Day in honor of Bob Shelton, who was the founder of Internationalist Books and who died 15 years ago today. And it's also the 25th anniversary of the bookstore, and, you know, understanding that the political orientation of Internationalist is not for everyone, I want to acknowledge what a resource it is to the community, including Carborough as well as Chapel Hill, and what a wonderful institution Bob Shelton set up, and it's really been a crossroads for much of the community. I'm pretty sure I first met Jackie at the bookstore there longer ago probably than either of us cares to want to remember.
Oh, we first met at the Skylight.
No, this is before that. So you don't remember. You made an impression. I guess I didn't.
I'm not touching that one.
Moving on.
Sorry. Anyway. anyway, I just wanted to acknowledge those anniversaries and the event that took place tonight and that institution and its importance to Carrboro as well as to Chapel Hill.
Thanks for bringing that up. I took note of the absence of any request or invitation being extended to the Carrboro Mayor's Office to weigh in on that same topic. But anyway, I have one quick thing, which is in all the appointments that we did recently, we did not appoint anybody to the Orange County Economic Development Commission. And I believe that we need to. John Herrera had been doing that in the past, but he says it is something that he is prepared to let go of. So we don't necessarily have to take action on it right now, but we could.
Here's just something that I thought I'd bring up. In the past, we've actually appointed citizens as well as board members to that. So we can, if there's somebody in the community, i.e. one of the people who... Mm-hmm. Has applied, you know, we may want to see if any of those folks are interested.
Who applied to the Economic Sustainability Commission?
Lena?
Alana,
yeah. Should we contact Alana to see if she might be interested?
Yeah. Okay. I will do that.
Okay.
I had one other question about that. A while back, I think it's part of the Economic Development Commission. There was the tourism, and we kind of threw out Jackie Helvey's name.
Oh,
what's
thank
the
you
position
for bringing that up. And she has concluded not to do that.
Okay, so that's still...
So we still need somebody from hospitality industry or related, closely related industry to represent Carrboro on the... Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County Visitors Bureau Board of Directors. There's a good long string of nouns for you. So, anyway, you can
I'll volunteer to poke around and see if I can troll up some of my colleagues from showbiz land.
There you go.
Somebody interested.
Yeah, or somebody, is anybody recently left the Economic Sustainability Commission who might fit the bill? Anyway, just a thought.
Or maybe one of the other applicants.
Okay. All right. Well, we will pick up both of those appointment subjects in March sometime. We're not meeting on February 28th next week because like half of us couldn't be here, I think. And then our next meeting is March 7th. Ma'am.
On February 28th, since this board isn't meeting, you know, there's the group of what do you call it? There is the committee to address homelessness within 10 years. And they are having a meeting that we are hosting on February 28th of all the elected officials. They're doing several focus groups throughout the county, and one of the focus groups is on elected officials. And that is February 28th. It is not in this room. It is, it is in this room. It is in this room, and I think it's at 7.
Okay.
Yeah, at 7. We're hosting it. You all got letters, but we get so many letters from so many people, and if we're not doing it.
Okay,
thank
RSVP
you.
Now.
Thank you. As many of you who can come, please come because we're hosting it.
Okay.
And that would be like not showing up at your own party.
The time again in the
7 o'clock here, elected officials throughout Orange County, to talk about coming up with a plan to address the needs of chronically homeless folks within the next 10 years.
One last thing. I do need your support on this one, just before I forget. You remember I mentioned to you folks that I got appointed to the Immigration Task Force of the National League of Cities?
Oh, yes.
Right. Apparently, members also have to serve in another committee, and I need to be, I guess, pass a resolution nominating me, asking the president of the league, Alice, our league representative.
He's a staff member, Ellis Hankins.
Ellis Hankins, that's right.
Yeah.
I forget.
Ellis is
to recommend me to be in the policy and advocacy committee of the National League of Cities.
So moved.
It's been moved.
That's all what I need.
Second.
And seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
There
you go.
Hey,
I think
they may have got us out earlier than this.
You all won't shut up.